Welcome to a series of netcasts brought to you by Yale University.
Jose Antonio Vargas is a journalist who has written substantial articles for noteworthy newspapers and magazines, such as The Washington Post, The Huffington Post, and The New Yorker. In 2011, Vargas wrote an essay for the New York Times Sunday Magazine titled My Life as an Undocumented Immigrant, in which he has chronicled the years he has spent hiding his immigration status after learning as a teen that his green card was fake. In 2011, Vargas founded Define American, a nonprofit that seeks to change the conversation on immigration reform. Vargas spoke about his personal story and Define American at Yale Law School on December 1, 2011. The talk was sponsored by several Yale groups, including Yale Law School's Asian Pacific American Law Students Association.
Well, good evening. I'm really happy to be able to welcome all of you, and I'm thrilled to be able to welcome Jose Antonio Vargas to Yale. As probably all of you know, Jose burst onto the national scene earlier this year with the publication of his article, My Life as an Undocumented Immigrant, in the New York Times Magazine, which is a beautifully and powerfully written account of his discovery of his undocumented status, his relationships with his family, with teachers, with mentors and employers, and the struggle to maintain the secret of being undocumented. Jose has since launched a campaign called Define American, which I hope he'll talk about, to multiply the voices participating in the national conversation about immigration. And while he's gained a newfound prominence in these past 5.5 months since the publication of his article, he has been doing the hard work of consequential journalism for years. He was part of a Pulitzer Prize-winning team of reporters from the Washington Post that covered the Virginia Tech shootings in 2007. He wrote a series of groundbreaking articles on the HIV/AIDS epidemic in Washington, D.C. And last year, he wrote a major exclusive profile of Mark Zuckerberg for The New Yorker. Now, since the publication of his magazine, New York Times Magazine article this year, Jose has been laying bare the stories of undocumented immigrants in the United States, not least his own. In so doing, Jose is calling the question on underlying assumptions, not just about the undocumented, but about our understandings of citizenship and belonging, the interplay of race, ethnicity, culture, class, and sexuality in our national politics, and the question of what it means to render people illegal. The range and diversity of the student groups that are sponsoring this program tonight is a testament to the resonance of Jose's story and the conversations that he's catalyzing across the country, and the conversation that we look forward to having with all of you tonight. So I'm really happy to, again, to have all of you here, and I'm happy to welcome Jose to this conversation.
Thank you. Hi. You know, the best part of this is they can take down all my photos that's all over the hallways over here. So after this, please take them down. I've always wanted to be in Yale. This is my first time being here. I just never thought this would be the circumstances. So thank you for having me and for being so welcoming already. I'm a little nervous, and I'm already looking around, and people seem very warm. So this is good. As Munir said, so it's been about 5.5 months since I wrote the essay. It's felt like a whole year has passed. And what I'm really here to kind of start to talk about, and hopefully I really want this to be a conversation, and in some ways, hopefully an uncomfortable challenge to each other in how we talk about immigration and the roles that all of us have to play in this conversation. And let me repeat that. The roles that each of us have to play in this conversation. It was actually around this time last year, on December 18th, that I decided finally that I was going to do this. That was the day that the DREAM Act failed in the Senate. That was definitely the final straw for me. The whole process of thinking about what this would mean for me personally started when I was profiling Mark Zuckerberg for The New Yorker. And he asked me a simple question of where I was from. Where are you from? And I couldn't answer him really honestly. And there I was talking to Mark Zuckerberg, and I couldn't answer him about a very simple, basic question. So that's when the seed was planted in my head that, Jose, this is becoming way too surreal. And then the DREAM Act failed in the Senate. I'm watching all of these undocumented students and leaders and organizers across the country, including actually there are many people here from Students for a Dream, Connecticut Student for a Dream. Can you raise your hand if you're members of this group? Yeah. You know, groups of undocumented students who have organized themselves and risked their lives to advocate on their own behalf because no one else was advocating for them. So that's when I started feeling like, all right, Jose, like, you need to step up and kind of face something that I've been unwilling to face since I found out when I was 16. And part of the realization was the role that I had to play in this, being who I am and being fully who I am. By that I mean, you know, I look like this. My name is Jose Antonio Vargas. As you can imagine, it's a little confusing for people. It's called being Filipino. Just kidding. I, you know, I came out as openly gay when I was in high school, right after Matthew Shepard was killed. I majored in black studies and political science in college, and I'm undocumented. So all those things are, I'm like the ultimate minority in some regards. But I actually don't think of myself as such. You know, I come in full. Let me repeat that. I come in full. All of these things, they all make up who I am. And I can only represent myself. And really what I'm getting at is the point that each of us in this room, undocumented and documented, we have gotten at a point in this conversation, right, in which all of us need to speak out about the ignorance, the indifference, and the injustice that permeates and colors the entire conversation, right? I mean, we are all, I would hope, we'd like to think of ourselves as conscious people, meaning we know that when we talk about an undocumented student who's been living here since they were 6 or 7, graduated from college here, who has a biology degree, and who now has to wait tables even though he or she has been offered jobs because of the way the law is, we know that that's just not right from a moral standpoint, from a legal standpoint, really even from a financial standpoint, right? But what are you doing to speak out about that, right? I just got back from Alabama. And I got to Alabama the day after it was no longer a felony for me to even be in Alabama. As you guys know, Alabama passed HB 56, which is the most anti-immigrant bill in the country. And it's so bad that it's a felony right now for an undocumented person to get in any business transaction with a governmental entity. Translation, some people are actually afraid to get water from the government because they would be asked for their documentation. This is a real thing happening in the state of Alabama. What, some 50 years after the civil rights movement, right? History is cracking open and repeating itself, right? And what was really heartening about being in Alabama was talking to so many conscious and sympathetic African-American leaders who are standing up for Latinos and Asians, and there are Asian people in Alabama, who are saying that this law is not right, and this law doesn't represent what is good about Alabama. And this is really what we're doing, as Munir was referring to. When I came out, I knew that if I was gonna do this, it couldn't just be my story, you know. I didn't want it to be this vanity act. I lived in Washington, D.C. for 5 years. I know exactly what a vanity act looks like, and I did not wanna be one of those. So it meant starting an organization, starting a campaign called Define American. So please do me a favor, check it out, defineamerican.com. And more than anything, we're not advocating for a specific policy point. We are not talking about comprehensive immigration reform. What we're actually doing is we're advocating for a comprehensive immigration conversation. Let me repeat that. A comprehensive immigration conversation. And that means that illegal immigration is not just about people like me. It's not just about undocumented people. It's about American citizens, white, black, Asian, Latino, of whatever background, who has a role to play in this conversation, right? Who has a responsibility and an obligation to speak up on this issue that even liberals don't know how to talk about? You know, we can talk, liberals and progressives can talk amongst themselves and talk about gay rights, which is an, of course, important thing, very dear to me as somebody who's gay. We can talk about the environment, which is, of course, a very important thing. Yet I can't even tell you how many times I've met and spoken with liberal and progressive leaders who somehow can't connect the dot when it comes to immigrant rights, who can't somehow realize that this is not just in their lawn, outside mowing their lawn and babysitting their kids, it's actually right in their living room. In some ways, one of the reasons why I like going, speaking to colleges and universities is because, I hate to break the ice to you here, this is your problem. This is gonna be one of the most defining issues of your generation. Why? Because 50% of kids under the age of 30 in this country is Hispanic or Asian. Many of you come from immigrant families, documented and undocumented. And mind you, I'm sure, hopefully, we'll get some questions here about, well, what do we do about the system? How do we fix it? Can we just let everybody in? How about the people that waited in line, right? I welcome that discussion. But you also have a role to play in this. I was recently in Washington, D.C., visiting the Martin Luther King Memorial. And you know, you go to D.C., you go to these memorials, and you're like, oh, gosh. You know, actually, that was the first time that I actually kind of personally impacted by just standing there and reading all the quotes, you know, this etch and all the stones. But one quote that was missing that I thought was, that I think is really important, is this one. When Martin Luther King said that, and this was at the height of the Civil Rights Movement, right? When he said that history will record that in this period, of social transition, right? And we are yet in another period of social transition. The greatest tragedy is not the strident clamor of the bad people, but the appalling silence of the good people. So at Define American, what we're really doing is trying to find stories of teachers and pastors and best friends of the undocumented students who are willing to step up and say, wait up a second, that's my student, that's my friend, that's the woman that goes to my church. She's American. In many ways, we're kind of turning the table and saying, this is a collective and shared problem. So now what are you gonna do about it? Are you gonna ask the hard questions? Like, what would you have done if you were 16 and you went to the DMV and you found out that your driver's license was fake? I mean, that your green card was fake. What would you have done? Would you have, I don't know, what would you have kept wanting to get jobs like I did, or would you have just worked under the table jobs? What would you do? What would you do if you found out, or if you realize that for some reason, and again, this is where the connecting the dots has to happen, why do people move to this country? What does U.S. foreign policy, what do trade agreements that the United States has had for decades, what does that have to do with the decimation of middle class in countries like Mexico, the Philippines, Ecuador, Guatemala, El Salvador? Why are people moving here? My mother, who I haven't seen since I was 12, it's been 18 years, she didn't send me here to say, oh, you know, I just don't want to see him for the next 18 years. She sent me here because she thought that I needed to be here to have a better life. And now that I'm older and more conscious, the question that I asked was, wait up a second, is the Philippines that bad that I couldn't have a life there? And if it is, what, then why? Right? What do we do with the immigration system? Do we just let everybody in? Do we only let people who have engineering degrees or doctoral degrees or lawyer degrees? Do we only embrace people who are quote-unquote model minorities, the valedictorians, the people who can get to a university like Yale when most people can't? So do we then say that, all right, we welcome you if you have a law degree or a doctor degree, but if you just want to wait tables or, I don't know, if you want to clean my hotel room, there's no really H-1B visa for that. These are some really hard questions. And if we're not willing to answer them, we're never going to get to the bottom of this issue. So there off I went. So I hope that this is a conversation that we can really, everybody here can start embracing and challenging themselves and how they think about it. And I really welcome the members of Students for a Dream, the Connecticut group, to rise up and ask some questions themselves.